Thank you. Be seated. The court is ready to hear argument for petitioner in Bradbury v. Central Power and Lights.
May it please the court, Mr. William Cole will present argument for petitioner. Petitioner has reserved 5 minutes for rebuttal.
May it please the court, this case is brought pursuant to the original Texas Commission on Human Rights Act, effective September 1st, 1983, 5221 case. Mr. Bradbury filed a complaint under that act.
Which has been changed.
Yes, several times, Your Honor.
Rather material is it applies to this case, don't you think, or not?
The change was in as a result of the Chevron decision. It has been changed. I think the question was the original intent to encompass all conditions which limited a person in performing a job-related function.
Well, let me just ask you this, though. If you just looked at the language of 5221K and the present language is quite a bit different. Would you say that or not?
Yes, Your Honor.
It seems like it to me.
Today, it tracks the ADA.
Mm-hmm. But this is under the old statute.
Yes, Your Honor. John Bradbury filed an administrative charge. He got a notice of right to file a civil action. He filed it within 60 days as required by the Act. Trial was to the court. The court ordered reinstatement, back pay. That order was superseded. The Court of Appeals reversed. They found no evidence that he was handicapped pursuant to the original definition, 2.017A. The question before the court is chronic atopic dermatitis, a condition which is not listed in the original definition of 2.07A, a handicap within the contemplation of that statute. In Chevron versus Redmond, decided by this court in 1987, the court was faced with a particular problem. Redmond, Jill Ann Carter, never filed a charge of discrimination under the Texas Commission on Human Rights Act because there was no Texas Commission on Human Rights. That case proceeded under the old Human Resources Code 121.03F, which was repealed by the Texas Commission on Human Rights Act. The particular problem the court faced in that case is, do we expand the rights of the litigant in the middle of litigation and apply a statute retroactively? What the court did was apply that statute retroactively, but construed it narrowly. Redmond needs to be limited to its facts. It needs to have the recognition that case was not brought under the Texas Commission on Human Rights Act. That is a particular factual distinction, which is very important. The particular procedural problem that the court grappled with is that we can't apply retroactively an administrative framework, which Mr. Bradbury complied with to the T. That's what he did in this case. I've provided the court the Attorney General's opinion, which is cited in the dissent in Redmond. The Attorney General's opinion at that time, Mr. Hale, the Executive Director, asked, is 2.0178 an exclusive list? The Attorney General's opinion looked specifically at the language in 2.0178. I've also included the legislative history. There is a key difference between the Human Resources Code and 5221K as originally enacted. The key difference is the exclusion of a condition of addiction to drugs or alcohol. Using legislative intent, statutory construction, when there is an exclusion, the emphasis is that everything not excluded is included. The particular legislative intent, and in the State Affairs Committee at that time, there was clear recognition that we are not adopting the Human Resources Code wholeheartedly. The problem with Redmond is that what it does, it takes the statute, which has been repealed, and put into a new statute, applies the construction of the statute, which has been repealed, without recognition of the expanded rights intended by the legislation of 5221K. This court has addressed this question.
I can understand the importance of this case to your client, but what is the importance to the jurisprudence of the state of Texas for the Supreme Court to write an opinion on a repealed statute?
Because there are other cases, I am sure, which are working their way through the system just as this one did. Your Honor, clarity, certainty, settled case.
Do you know of any personally, or are you assuming? And perhaps it's a good a good assumption.
This is my last case under the original Texas Commission on Human Rights Act.
But you have no way of quantifying, I presume?
No, Your Honor.
Okay, thanks.
But I think it is important. Don Bradbury believed in rule of law for 6.5 years. He complied with the statute to the Sheila Ann Carter, later became Mrs. Redmond, could not because that statute was not in effect. There is a statutory framework which he complied with. The key question here was the original intent was 2.017A, was that to be an exclusive list? There are some hints from this court, maybe I'm construing them over broadly, but Finney versus Baylor Hospital, that case was writ denied. The particular question there was manic depression, a handicap within the contemplation of 2.017A, the original handicap definition under the Texas Commission on the Human Rights Act. Summary judgment granted at the trial court, the distinction there that says, one, it's an emotional condition. Court of Appeals reversed, said there are fact questions, writ denied. That, Justice Gamage cited with approval in the Caballero Caballero 1 in indicating that other courts of appeals have allowed a determination of threshold issues of handicap and discrimination before the grant of any relief, cites Finney versus Baylor, clearly as indicated in footnote 6. The favorable jury findings on handicap were not preserved for review. Here, this question is preserved. I think it is important that the court finally effectuate the legislative intent, which was that there be more dignity in the world, that people be have more opportunities to exercise their full capacity, not less.
Speaking to that, though, looking at the text of the statute, if it's not somehow limited to the examples that are given, then you're left with nothing but handicap means a condition, either mental or physical. Do you propose any limitation on that definition?
The particular problem in that statute is that it did not contemplate the situation where a person is going to be regarded as handicapped, not being able to, given the opportunity to do a job because they are regarded as handicapped, which is in the new act. I think the particular problem that's grappled with in Redmond, in the Attorney General's opinion, is how do we restrict that? And I think one of the most difficult things in employment litigation is that they are so fact-intensive. We have got to ask, is there a physical impairment which is keeping you from realizing your full productive abilities in a particular job? That is a fact question. We need to look at that in the context of evidentiary hearings at the trial court. Can this person do this job with reasonable accommodation? Is there some thing that can be done to allow a person who has the ability to exceed, to earn a living, to support himself? We have got to look at that in a particular factual context. The problem with Redmond is to the attempt to draft a generalization which is limited, and that attempt is doomed to failure.
But you've got to say something, as you just recognized. It can't be just a mental or physical condition, period. I mean even you just now have proposed some kind of limitation on that, which you say has broader parameters, but it's still something.
It is a condition which limits the performance of some work-related functions. And the particular evidence in this record, John Bradbury had a problem which after each shift, he had to remove layers of dead skin. He had to take medication, and he removed more layers of dead skin. His skin cracked. Every time he thought about moving, he was concerned about those cracks and fissures in his skin. I think when looking at all these things, what we're really talking about is limitations on mobility. a person's ability to orient themselves in time and space, the ability to hear, the ability to see, the ability to interact in the workplace. And when you have a condition like Mr. Bradbury that began to dominate his whole life, that began taking the skin off every night at work, taking more medication, not being able to even think about moving without feeling the fissures which were about to open in his skin, that is severely limited. And I think the particular problem in this case is Don Bradbury did a job for 6 years. He read meters in the South Texas heat and did it well. His supervisor said he did it well. And then they gave him a promotion. And he worked in the air conditioning, which his skin began to crawl and cracks began to appear. And then he started taking it off layers after layers after each shift. At that point, they said, you're not working hard enough. Their handicap discrimination is at the point racial discrimination was 40 years ago, gender discrimination 30 years ago. Employers think, they don't think, and that's the problem. Here's the problem, a skin condition, a man working for 6 years, doing a job well, let him continue to do that job rather than put him in a circumstance which is excruciating, then demote him, then terminate him. That's what this case is about. One man who simply wanted to read meters and keep that most of us is fine and acceptable. Because air conditioning, which causes most of us a great deal of comfort.
When he was demoted, though, he was taken out of the air conditioned room, right?
Yes. To a plant repairman job, not to his old job as auxiliary operator.
Well, it was not as good a salary as he had before he went into the air conditioned room?
Exactly. It was a demotion, and it was a prelude to termination.
Well, did he ask for the privilege of just getting back to an un-air-conditioned place?
Yes. He wanted that job back. He did it well. His two supervisors said they recommended him for top pay, and it was denied because of the skin problem.
I mean, it's fact, getting pretty fact-based, but
was their position that old job was to be used for somebody for training to better jobs, right?
But they didn't. That's one of the key questions, and I think if we were under the Rehabilitation Act or the ADA, we'd be talking about essential functions. Was that an essential function of the job, being promoted to the C operator working in there? I think that's a disputed fact question, which has been resolved by the supervisor saying, good evaluation, he's doing his job and he's doing it well. I think we would be using a different analysis. It would be the essential function analysis. But we have sufficient evidence in the record to indicate that he was performing that job, even without the essential function analysis that would be
used. Mr. Palmer, one of the questions I have about this, I couldn't understand from what's being presented that his physical condition interfered with his performing the physical functions of his job. I gathered from your brief that what you're saying is that his physical condition distracted him.
Yes.
To the point that he wasn't doing well on his job. Now, what is kind of being protected here that you're arguing about? Is it that if a person is concerned about their physical condition, then that's enough to kick in their protection under this statute, even though the employer is not placing the employee, I mean, the employer isn't requiring the employee to do something that they physically cannot do as a form of discrimination. The employer is just contributing to the depression of the employee because the employee's physical condition. Is that what's at
your point? The point is reached when an employee has to go home every night and remove layers of dead skin, take medication, when their skin is so covered with cracks and fissures that every move they make while they're still doing their job is one that is extremely unpleasant. When it begins, despite the performance of the job, it begins to dominate their life.
I'm trying to put this in the simplest terms so I can understand. The Act clearly covers people not being precluded from holding employment that they can perform because of disabilities.
Yes.
You're arguing that as well, it would preclude employers from placing satisfactory employees in work environments or jobs which aggravate handicaps to the point that they cannot perform those jobs well when they are performing adequately or superbly in another job.
You're exactly right. The Act contemplates accommodation. It does not contemplate aggravation. This aggravated a condition to the point where a man simply wanted to do his job. This condition dominated his life. That shouldn't happen.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. Court is ready to hear argument from this conference.
May it please the court, Mr. Chris Dole will present argument for respondent.
May it please the court. First, with regard to the Redmond decision, I believe it is one of the controlling decisions and probably the most important decision in this case. Page 315 of that decision, the court stated that we hold that Redmond is not handicapped under Article 5221K as a matter of law. So they are, the court was interpreting the statute that we have before us here. Redmond is important. It sets out the standards. They indicate that the legislature is concerned with significant impairments and not just any chronic whether disease, whether it's atopic dermatitis, which is synonymous with eczema, or whether it's dandruff or some other condition.
Counsel, if we can see the legislature was talking about significant impairments, significant to who?
Is significant in the context of what is generally perceived as being a handicap and limiting someone in the ability to do work-related functions in general.
Are you asking us then to write an interpretation of legislative intent in this case?
I think that's already been done in the Chevron versus Redmond case. I think the court there has indicated what the legislative intent was, and I just would ask that you follow the Chevron and Redmond case as the controlling law with regard to the requirement for severity of an impairment.
How severe does it have to be to the point where a person is totally incapacitated, incapable of performing the assigned task, or
well,
to the point here where the person suffers such discomfort and aggravation that it's perhaps total distraction and consumes his whole attention?
It has to be more than a minor impairment.
Is this minor?
This is a minor impairment. And I would, if I could respond to a few things. In a record, I think it is reflected that Mr. Bradbury has, there's one incident where he claims that he has this problem with tremendous itching and where he's pulling his skin out and that is after he was training in the air conditioned control room. He was not using his moisturizers then. He's snow skiing in the winter times for five times. But that is the absolute worst environment for someone with this condition. The cold, dry air is what he complains about. And yet, in five consecutive winters, including this year, 85, 86, 87, 88, he is out willfully placing himself in this condition that he claims handicaps. Okay. Now, there was some questioning about the essential function of the job. Is it required for him to be in this air conditioned control room? The testimony, Mr. Bradbury even admits, and his supervisors testify unequivocally, that part of the job of working as an auxiliary operator is to be able to provide relief to B and C operators. Okay? The auxiliary operator is at the bottom. You have a C, a B, and an A. CP&L at this time is undergoing a corporate reorganization with 387 jobs were changed. What was happening is the upper level people were off early retirement. CP&L needed to be able to allow to clear up this bottleneck, this training bottleneck, so that they could fill these upper slots. Now, Mr. Bradbury was not singled out. There were two people who were removed from the auxiliary operator position. he and Mr. Cantu were both removed from the auxiliary operator position to alleviate this bottleneck.
So it had nothing to do with his physical condition then? It was a reduction in force?
Absolutely. He was terminated. He was one of 28 people that were terminated. And it's important to keep in mind, he was offered three other jobs. He was offered at another power station. He was offered a job where he wouldn't have to be in any air conditioning at the home office. And he declined the jobs, saying that he simply could not live in Corpus Christi because of the difference in climate between there and McAllen, Texas, or Mission, which is right next door, which his doctor, his physician, Dr. Sotelo, does not support. In fact, Dr. Sotelo says in deposition that if Mr. Bradbury claimed he could not work in an air-conditioned environment, that he would have trouble taking that at face value. Dr. Rolando Yarito, though let me talk about Dr. Pacow first. Dr. Pacow is a dermatologist in the McAllen area. He worked at Brooke Army Medical Center and testified that when he had patients with severe cases of this condition, that he would put them in the air conditioning, and that there was not one of his patients that did not benefit from being put in that environment. And though what he should do is to use moisturizers on his skin, as he was instructed by Dr. Sotelo, to alleviate this dryness, which is artfully referred to as fissures and cracking and all this. Dr. Yarito did a subsequent employment physical after Mr. Bradbury left CPNL. He took a job with Thompson Electric working outdoors. He, of his own accord, took another job after that with Parker Steel. And the pre-employment physical was done by Dr. Yarito. Mr. Bradbury filled out the questionnaire that he didn't have any ulceration or chronic skin condition. Dr. Yarito, a dermatologist, a board-certified dermatologist, does a physical examination, reviews the questionnaire, and also concludes that Mr. Bradbury does not have a chronic skin condition. Now, how do we have a condition that qualifies somebody to be handicapped when a dermatologist doesn't detect it in examination, and this is approximately a year after he left CPNL? Is this what the legislature meant when they talked about handicap? I submit that it isn't. If we look to the list, someone asked earlier about the list, the definition of what is a handicap.
When Mr. Bradbury was terminated, what reason was given to him for his termination?
It was a corporate reorganization. In this corporate reorganization, everyone, and this is all in the record, everyone essentially did not have a job. Okay, they reorganized at all the different plants, and then they took existing employees who were not retiring or taking early retirement, and they put them in these different slots.
And then they tried to have it offered a different slot.
Correct. He was. He was at the Barney Davis Power Station in Corpus Christi. He was offered a position where he would be in less air conditioning than he was at his existing when he had the auxiliary operator position. He was then offered the position at the home office. And the long and short of it is he just doesn't want to leave Mission, Texas. But the corporation did what it could. They could not. It made absolutely no sense to leave him in a position of auxiliary operator when, by his own testimony, he cannot be in the conditions that the job requires him to be in to do the job.
He wanted his old job back.
Right. And at the time he was terminated, he was not an auxiliary operator. I mean, the trial court entered an order saying he should be restored to that position. He wasn't. He was an electrical maintenance man. Gary Clark had, when the two supervisors had asked Gary Clark, who was the guy in charge of electrical maintenance, who do you want out of the auxiliary operators? And he chose Mr. Bradbury because of Mr. Bradbury's experience in that job. Okay? Mr. Bradbury testified that Gary Clark accommodated him, and that he was accommodated by CP&L until the time that he was terminated. And there was a question about his salary. His salary, to my understanding, and I think it's clear in the record, that his salary was not lessened when he was given this other position. it would remain the same. There was a question about the new statute, the amendments. And there is a significant thing in there. One of the, what they did is they took out the term handicap, and they used the broader term disability. But in defining disability, what they require is that, that disability means a mental or physical impairment that substantially limits at least one major life activity. What major life activity has Mr. Bradbury been limited in? Certainly isn't snow skiing. I mean, that's the worst environment. He can do that and continue to do it. Atopic dermatitis is the same thing as eczema. Dr. Sotelo, his own treating doctor for 11 years, testified that it's variously assessed that between 2 and 20% of the U.S. population has this condition. For as many as 20 people in the United States handicapped for purposes of this act because they have eczema.
Counsel, maybe I'm not understanding your argument, but first I hear you say that he wasn't really handicapped, and then I hear you say, well, he was discharged because of the reduction in force. Which was it? Was he discharged was he discharged because he claimed he couldn't handle a position or because of reduction
not.
In force?
Absolutely not. He was not discharged because he claimed he couldn't handle it. He was able to do the position he was in at the time before the reorganization.
So it was the reduction in force?
Absolutely. And that's what he said on his subsequent employment applications, which are all in evidence, that he was terminated pursuant to a 10% workforce reduction. That's his own statement. He also, in his resumes to the subsequent employers, says that he's in good health. He's been working in this air-conditioned environment for probably 2 or 3 years now that he claims he can't work in at the Parker Steel Factory. And again, part of the test is what is generally perceived as severely limiting work-related functions in general. And I submit that eczema is not something that is generally perceived as severely limiting work-related functions in general.
You don't have to resolve a contract.
I'm looking around. I'm trying to find out if there's any more questions that I can answer. I was going to talk about the definition a little bit.
I just want to be clear. Do I understand the time that he was discharged? He had opportunity to work elsewhere in the company, but declined to.
Before he was discharged, he was offered 3 different jobs. First, at the Barney Davis Power Station. Better conditions for his claimed skin problem. Okay? He declined that, and if you look through the evidence, the reason is the difference between Corpus Christi and Mission, Texas. Okay? Which his own doctor testifies there is not a significant difference. After looking at the humidity charts, the temperature charts, and everything else.
What were the other two?
The other was at the home office, where he would be working indoors and outdoors, but not in the air-conditioned control room that he complained about.
Is that so,
I'm sorry.
Where is it?
In Corpus Christi?
Where is the home office?
It is in Corpus Christi, Texas.
And you said there was a third?
Yes. The sea operator position at the Bates Power Station is the other one, which is the station he was at. See, he was in an auxiliary operator position. He was taken out. The requirement of that position is you have to be able to move up. They offered him the sea up. He said no. They offered him Corpus Christi. He said no. They offered him home office where he doesn't have to be in the air-conditioned control room that he complains about. He said no. Right. How many jobs does the business have to offer? I submit that the definition of handicap, they start out with the generous rules. They start out with the general terms mental or physical handicap, and then they list under there I submit to you that eczema is not similar in character and severity as to those listed under the general category, the general and then the listings. That is how I think you apply the generis rule. That is how I believe the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals applied the generis rule in reversing it. They did it on a legal sufficiency basis. They didn't even reach the factual sufficiency of the evidence or the other 9 points of error that we had before them. But I think their opinion should be affirmed on the legal sufficiency basis on the generis rule.
Do you think there's any legal or factual error in the opinion of the court below?
I'm sorry?
Is there any legal or factual error in the opinion of the court below in your opinion?
I didn't hear the last 5 words in the court.
In the opinion of the Court of Appeals, that we're reviewing that.
No, I think that they were correct in reversing it on the generis rule.
That's not my question. Is there any legal error in that you, in your briefing, believe? Have you found anything that you believe is an error in that opinion?
In the Corpus Christi Court of Appeals decision in this case?
Yes.
No, I have not. I think their application of the generis rule is correct. If you want to talk about Finney, I think Finney is distinguishable. Okay, Finney is a case where summary judgment was granted on the ground that the condition was only emotional. Okay, and in other words, not a mental or physical limitation, but just an emotional one. And the court there, in reversing, said that no, there's evidence in the record, and we send it back for a proper categorization as to what type of claim it is. So they never reached it. That decision is before the Hilton decision, which first talked about the generis rule. They didn't have to talk about it. The Court of Appeals and Finney didn't have to talk about the generis rule. It hadn't been talked about before. But they didn't get to that point where we were.
I think the question is directed toward, from your standpoint, is there any reason why the court should not refuse the Court of Appeals opinion? Thereby making
Absolutely
it
not. I think they should accept it.
Thereby making it equivalent to the Supreme Court opinion.
That's exactly what I think the court should do.
Any other questions?
And I have nothing further if there aren't any other questions.
Thank you.
Thank you.
The reason the court should write on this case is because for 6.5 years, Don Bradbury followed the statutory framework. He had the standing to bring this. He obtained findings of fact. He got an order getting his job back, superseded. The Court of Appeals decision is wrong. It is wrong because it said, in effect, this is an exclusive list. We admitted that we're not on that list except for physical or...
Counsel, you say he got an order getting his job back. Did he want his job back?
Yes, Your Honor.
He wanted the job in the air-conditioned room where he had to peel his chin off every night?
He wanted his job back as auxiliary operator, which the day after he was terminated was filled by an inexperienced, non-handicapped employer. Again, to this day,
he wanted the job back where that he couldn't do and turned down 3 other jobs in order to get the job back that he couldn't do.
He wanted the job of auxiliary operator back that he had done for 6 years.
Isn't that the one where he had to peel the skin off every night?
No. That one was C operator.
Okay.
The job of auxiliary operator he did for 6 years. He
Is
got
that
good.
The meter reading?
Yes.
Was he offered other opportunities that
he was
accommodated his condition?
He was offered a C operator position in Corpus Christi, which is the same type of condition which led him to have to debride himself after work every day.
Is the job in Corpus Christi different than the one in Mission? You said the C operator in Mission was a job he liked because he was outside, he was reading meters, he wasn't in air conditioning. Did he have to move into air conditioning?
That was auxiliary operator. C operator is when he went into the air conditioning and started to have to take his skin off.
Was he offered any other opportunities that would have accommodated his condition?
No.
None?
No.
Mr. Sorbel said that there were 3 jobs he was offered. You're disputing that?
Yes. The record clearly indicates that the plant manager told him that he was going to move to Corpus, that his problem had a lot to do with the move. That's stating the facts, volume 3, page 66. They gave him the one job he knew he couldn't do. It's no surprise.
How about the statements made by Mr. Sobel that his own dermatologist said that he was not handicapped?
He's not. That's not quite accurate. The specific thing is that he can move across the street, he can walk, he can support himself. Their expert testified at trial, Dr. Picoult, they wouldn't work. Their expert dermatologist said they wouldn't wish this condition on his worst enemy. For 6.5 years, they have minimized the condition, which doesn't bother them. Now they say that no, the Court of Appeals says that none of this made any difference. Following the system should be affirmed when it's flat out wrong. When we admitted, no, we are not one of the listed conditions, but we are a physical and mental handicap. People believe in the rule of law. They believe that justice will prevail someday.
You begin saying that Redmond should be limited to its facts.
Yes.
But you're pretty close to saying Redmond ought to be overruled. I mean, it's hard to distinguish eczema and 20/60 vision in the context of the argument that you make. But you think Redmond can still survive?
There needs to be a recognition of what they actually did is apply a statute retroactively, that they construed it narrowly. That is not a good result. Redmond really should have been decided on the basis of regarded as a handicap, which is in the new statute. That was a particular problem. That was a job applicant. Here's a man who performed a job for 6 years, and his supervisors, the people who looked at his work, said he performed it well. This is a man who simply wanted to do a job 8 hours a day that did not require the removal of his skin after every shift.
I'm not clear on, was he offered 3 jobs or 1 job that he particularly could not do?
The record shows that he was demoted. That was not a job offering, that was a demotion. Thereafter, after the demotion, he was offered the same job that was causing his skin to have to be debrided in Corpus Christi.
That just a single, he was not offered a job at the home office, or what was the
job in Corpus Christi was the same job that caused the exacerbation of the atopic dermatitis. After that, he was terminated. The day after he was terminated, a non-handicapped, inexperienced employee who had never performed the job of auxiliary operator.
You're on our time now.
Mr. Sobel, let me respond, if you would, to Judge Spencer's question. Mr. Sobel told us that he was offered 3 jobs, as I recall. 2 of them were in Corpus Christi, and another one was there in Mission. And at least one of those jobs in Corpus Christi would not have aggravated his condition, would not have been the same, would not have worked in the same air-conditioned environment that he had to work in there in Mission to be operated. Is that correct or is that incorrect?
That was a disputed fact question.
There was some evidence in the record that from one dermatologist that he should not have debrided himself after each shift. That in fact harmed his condition.
That
should have put creams on it. So, did you have evidence from an expert that he had, that in fact after working in air conditioning, he had to do that?
His doctor testified that he knew how to control his condition. He did not testify specifically about the debridement process.
Any other questions? Thank you, counsel. That concludes the argument in the third matter. We'll take another break.